Hello and welcome to our February Lunch and Learn webinar designed specifically for accountants in practice. My name is Alan Nelson. I'm the founder and managing director of Accounting CPD. I should start by welcoming all of you attending today. I hope you find the next hour interesting, relevant and useful. This month we welcome two guests. First up is Steve Collins, who will be discussing the year ahead and what we should include in our CPD plans. And then I'm pleased to welcome Gail McAvoy, who will be sharing the findings of her research into digitalisation in smaller practices in UK and Ireland. As we go along, please do ask questions. The Q&A session at the end is often the most interesting part of the webinar, but it of course only works if you ask those questions. Along the way, you can also contribute by using the chat facility. So without further ado, I should introduce our first guest, Steve Collins. Steve is the audit and technical partner at Levitt Walmsley Associates. For several years, he's been the author of our UK and Ireland gap updates and of two courses on auditing. This month, we're publishing a pair of new courses that Steve has written on practice management, practice compliance, and practice excellence. Steve is a prolific writer and commentator on all aspects of financial reporting and audit, and is the author of over 20 books on the subject. Steve's coming down to see us in February at Accounting CPD and represents perhaps the most significant challenge I will face in my extended dry January plan. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Alan. You okay?
I'm good. Thank you for coming today. It's great to see you.
You're welcome. Very welcome.
I should start by saying that I know that both you and we at Accounting CPD believe that a CPD plan should be, you know, much more than just the technical updates. It should be a broad plan for the individual's development. But we're here today to talk specifically about the technical updates that are coming down the line. So we should stick to that. And with that in mind, let's start with financial reporting. What changes should we be aware of in UK and Ireland GAAP or in IFRS?
Well, that's a very good question at the minute. And I'm sure that many people on the webinar today will have heard about FRED 82, Financial Reporting Exposure Draft 82, which was our Christmas present from the Financial Reporting Council, a 346-page document outlining the FRC's proposed changes to not just FRS 102, but to all the FRSs in the suite of UK and Ireland GAAP. That was issued on the 15th of December 2022. I didn't spend Christmas Day reading it, I hasten to add.
Nice timing though.
Yeah, my brain is tortured enough with financial reporting without doing that over Christmas. But I think it's important to look at a couple of the main points in that exposure draft, because there are some significant proposals for change on the cards that it's going to affect pretty much every practice and every preparer in the UK and Ireland. Shall I start off with the worst one first that I think is going to cause quite a lot of contention? And of course, the rumblings of on-balance sheet finance have been ongoing now for a few years, ever since the FRC's triennial review was completed back in 2017. And at the time, the FRC said that they were waiting on implementation feedback from IFRS reporters, of course, IFRS 16, which was a very, very, very contentious IFRS that was issued by the IASB and essentially brought all leases for lessees onto the balance sheet. So you no longer have this distinction of operating lease or finance lease under IFRS 16. The FRC are now following in those footsteps and they are proposing to bring in leases on the balance sheet for lessees, which essentially means that if the proposals go through as drafted, we are going to see the sort of abolition of finance lease versus operating lease. So all your leases for lessees will be on balance sheet. There are some limited exceptions to this treatment in respect of low value leases, which isn't as straightforward as what it first sounds like. And it talks about the value of the underlying asset and all that sort of thing. And leases that have got quite a short period of time to run, so leases with 12 months or less to run on them. those two areas, those exceptions will still be treated as what we do now with operating leases, but everything else is largely on the balance sheet. There are mixed views on this, and it is a case of sort of, I would imagine there's going to be very mixed views when everybody gets to hear about this, because it's going to impact on all entities who are going to have to retrospectively change financial statements as well. And it's what the problem that we foresee at the moment is the discount rate that we need to apply to discount the cash flows in the lease to arrive at the value for the right to use asset, because it's the actual right of use asset that you're capitalizing in these sorts of situations with a corresponding finance lease creditor. So that's the first bit of bad news, if you like, what the FRC, I mean, it might be good news, depending on whether you agree with the proposals or not. I know quite a lot of accountants don't agree with the proposals. It is something that really shouldn't come in as a massive surprise to accountants, because this has been bubbling away in the background for a number of years now. So that's one area that we do need to keep an eye out on. The other issue is revenue recognition that we need to sort of keep an eye on as well. Section 23, I must just quickly add for leases that FRS 105, so the micro entity standard, that is not going to follow in the same footsteps. So you are still, for micro entities preparing their accounts under FRS 105, they will still have the existing treatment for leases. The FRC aren't proposing to change anything in FRS 105 at the moment. So I suspect, where you've got a micro entity that currently reports under FRS 102, they might, you know, sort of drop down to FRS 105 to take advantage of existing accounting treatments in leasing. For revenue, the revenue section in FRS 102, section 23, has been completely redrafted in the exposure draft. That has also had its name changed as well. So we currently just have section 23, which is revenue, and they're proposing to change it for revenue from contracts with customers. Now, if you keep in sort of touch with IFRS, the world of IFRS, that name will ring bells to you, because it's the same name as IFRS 15. And of course, what the FRC are doing is they're aligning section 23, as they are with the leasing section, to that of IFRS 15, which is revenue from contracts with customers. Now, when they're doing these alignments, it's not a case of they're just going to simply copy and paste everything in IFRS 15 and 16 and dump it into FRS 102, because there have to be simplifications made, which is what they are doing. And there are a number of simplifications that have been made in the exposure draft. But for IFRS 15, section 23, the most notable thing is this five-step model approach to revenue recognition. Now, I'm less concerned about the impact of that, in fairness, because, to be quite honest, to put it simply, we already follow a sort of model approach, if you like, to the way that we recognize revenue for the sale of goods, revenue in respect of the rendering of services. So we're already used to meeting certain criteria, and we'll have to meet five specified criteria when we're doing revenue recognition. It will probably affect some entities in terms of the amount of revenue that they will recognize and when they will recognize that revenue. But it isn't something that I think we're going to see a lot of companies having to reinvent the wheel over. Okay. Those are the two areas I think that are the most notable things. And those are the areas that I think we need, in terms of CPD and financial reporting, to keep abreast on. You should also just keep in mind as well that there have been new, the latest editions of the standards that we're working to is the January 2022 editions of the standards. Those consolidate all the amendments that the FRC made to the March 18 editions when they were last issued prior to January 2022. However, FRS 100, which is the application of financial reporting requirements, was issued at the end of last year. It was revised in November 2022 because we've now got new equivalence guidance for the exemptions from preparing consolidated financial statements, due in large part to Brexit. So just be aware that FRS 100 is the November 2022 edition that we need to be looking at. What I would also say with financial reporting and keeping up with CPD is just make sure that you embed sort of refresher courses. So of course, we here on accountingcpd.net, we have the UK and Ireland gap update that I'm currently writing for 2023. And what we do in that is we cover some of the more complex areas. And those areas are dealt with, and we arrive at putting those areas in those courses based on feedback that I get from things like file reviewers and reports issued by monitoring officers, those sorts of things, where firms do tend to fall into some of the pitfalls where financial reporting is concerned. So it's important that you don't just keep abreast of developments on what is changing, but also, you know, areas where you feel that you may struggle with or your clients may struggle with, just to make sure that the accounting treatment is correct. Have I covered everything there?
I think so. I think that final point you make is really, really valid, that we tend to fixate on the things that are being changed, but sometimes things just become massively more important than they were previously because the circumstances we're operating in have changed. You know, we've started to get some fairly significant inflation around. We weren't operating in that situation before. There's much more uncertainty. We know that during COVID, we started thinking about going concern a lot harder than we had been doing before because it was more relevant. So the changing of circumstances mean that some standards that we kind of haven't thought about for some time can suddenly become important, and that might need a bit of revision.
It does. I mean, the good news is we're not looking in the UK gap update for accounting CPD. We're not looking at hyperinflation just yet.
Let's hope we're not. Yeah, absolutely.
We're not quite in that sort of dark, murky, horrible scene, you know. So we're not quite as bad into the those sort of times yet. And of course, today we got told that inflation has crept down a little bit, so this may be the turning point.
Yeah, that's I think that is quite encouraging, but we'll see. So at the risk of winding you up and setting you off again, what about audit? What's new there?
Audit.
I think this is going to be quite a lengthy answer, isn't it?
What time have I got till? We've got an hour, haven't we? Right. Well, first of all, let's just briefly recap on a couple of the mainstream standards. ISO 315. I had a very lengthy discussion about this standard with some technical people from various professional bodies on Friday, and I did express my sort of concern not only about the size of ISO 315, which is identifying and assessing the risks of material misstatements. I mean, they've shortened the title of that now. It used to be identifying and assessing the risk of material misstatement through understanding the entity and its environments. The title was quite long. They've shortened the title, but they've increased the size of the standard threefold, which I was horrified about. You know, looking at the standard, it's not worded great. It can be very difficult for practitioners to understand. What I will say about ISO 315 is that it is now, the revised standard is in effect. There's a lot more consideration of IT controls as well. And this isn't just a case of, you know, does the trial balance agree to the nominal ledger? It's all about looking at security and access rights and, you know, how often does the client assess its IT risks and those sorts of things, because you're trying to look at the bigger picture. And one thing that came out of the discussions I had on Friday was the fact that very few smaller audit firms will have access to people who know about complex IT systems and complex reporting systems. I've got an audit going on as we speak for a client that uses SAP, which it's well known to be quite a complex IT system. Now, luckily, my audit manager is very IT savvy and can understand these sorts of things. But I can fully appreciate how a smaller firm wouldn't be able to sort of try and get the head around the mechanics and the security behind such a system. So ISO 315 is something that you do need an awareness of. there's a lot more material, like I say, on IT controls and general controls. So just be aware of that. ISO 240, which is the fraud standard, of course, you would have expected ISO 240 to have been updated and revised by the FRC, given the fact that their sort of main goal at this moment in time is restoring confidence in the auditing profession. And with all the high profile corporate disasters that we've had over the last few years, it's unsurprising, therefore, that the fraud ISA has been updated. There's more responsibilities on the part of the auditor now to consider the risk of material misstatement due to fraud. So more procedures are needed, those sorts of things. ISQMs, quality management standards. Now, you know, I mean, the reality of it is that all the providers and the professional bodies, they've made a big song and dance about ISQMs for the last 18 months. So, you know, you're doing pretty sort of had your head in your hands, the head in the sand, if you hadn't heard of ISQM 1 and ISQM 2. The deadline for implementation of ISQM 1 was 15th of December 2022. So that's been and gone. So if a practice hasn't yet dealt with its ISQM 1 procedures, then it needs to move right up to the list of priorities, particularly if you've got a QAD visit or an ACCA monitoring visit impending, which you may or may not have heard about by now, if it's going to be this year, because the likelihood is they will ask to see your ISQM 1 procedures. We had an audit monitoring visit by ACCA last year, and they did ask to see our ISQC 1 procedures, as it was then, for inspection. ISQM replaces ISQC. So ISQC 1 is now obsolete. It's now being gone. It isn't just as straightforward as just going through your ISQC 1 procedures and changing the C to an M, because there's a lot more to the standard. It's a more proactive standard, ISQM 1. It's more scalable as well. I can sort of summarize it in three steps for the practitioner who's probably sat there with a head in the hands now thinking, oh no, I've not done that, I've forgotten about it. So basically what you have to do is you've got to work out how your firm is going to carry out high quality audit work. How they're going to do it, the sort of steps. So for example, you know, you're going to keep up to date with CPD, you're going to use the latest technology, you're going to perhaps use audit data analytics, those sorts of things. The next step is looking at the risks. So what are the risks that could affect you as a firm or the firm in carrying out high quality audit work? So what are they? So for example, the loss of key members of staff, okay? Or loss of audit clients, those sorts of things. The third stage is developing responses to those risks. So how are you going to mitigate those risks so that you can ultimately achieve the objective, which is for the firm to produce high quality audit work? Now, just keep in mind that ISQM 1 is a firm-wide quality management standard. So it looks at quality management at the firm. And then you've got ISO 220, which looks at quality management at the individual engagement level. So there's a very close interaction between ISQM 1 and ISO 220 that firms need an awareness of. I think those are the key issues in audit. ISO 315, ISO 240, ISQM 1, 2, and ISO 220.
So quite a bit of change, and in each case, quite a complex set of new requirements.
They are complex, but a lot of it, to be honest, when you look at these standards and the language that's used, the terminology that's used, the volume of them, when you actually dissect it, I mean, I've written about financial reporting and audit for donkey's years now, and when you look at these sorts of standards and what it is they say, a lot of it, you know, is common sense, you know. And it's just demonstrating compliance with the standard, or at least trying, particularly with it, when you've got a QAD inspector and ACCA monitoring visit, and those are getting more rigorous as confidence in the auditing profession needs to be restored. And I suppose if you are trying to do something like comply with ISQN1, but you're not quite there. But you like the 80-20 rule, you are demonstrating you're trying to comply with it. Then the professional bodies will help members as they go through, you know, and they will point you in the right direction. And my advice is to perhaps, if you are completely unsure whether you've achieved compliance or not, is to get some sort of training company, an external reviewer, to come in and have a look at your ISQN1 procedures, just to see whether or not you are on the right track.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Okay, I'm going to ask you, this is one of my questions, which is thinly disguised. Alan is going to ask a question, which is there anything else I should have asked you about? And this is the cleverly worded question. What other regulatory updates should people be aware of?
Oh, right, yeah. I was hoping you'd ask me that question. Right, first one. And again, it's a big thing. It's quite a big thing. Companies' house reforms. Okay. Now, I covered this quite recently in various material. And it is going to be, I think, somewhere in the UK GAP, UK and Ireland GAP update course that I'm producing for Accounting CPD. Of course, we all know that companies' house reforms, and it's not just companies' house in England and Wales, it's the equivalent in Northern Ireland and Scotland as well. And we're going to see reforms to those. So a couple of things. First of all, yes, we are going to, it is likely, should I say, that small and micro entities will have to file the profit and loss account. So they're looking at abolishing abridged and filleted accounts. I mean, abridged accounts were only brought in 2015 by virtue of statutory instrument 2015/980, which transposed the requirements, of course, of the EU accounting directive into company law. We're now getting rid of them. So they were short-lived, weren't they? So essentially, small companies and micro entities will have to file the full accounts in terms of what they prepare for the shareholders, what they file for HMRC. The idea of this, which I remain unconvinced, the idea is for transparency and to stop fraud. I'm not quite sure how you stop fraud by making a micro entity file its profit and loss account, but you know, there is some logic, I would imagine, somewhere down the line in the white paper. So we are seeing full accounts for smaller micro entities coming into play. What else have we got? We've also got some sort of audit exemption statement that's coming in, I believe, for directors in their financial statements where they've claimed audit exemption to sort of demonstrate why they have claimed audit exemption. Now, this, I'm led to believe, isn't going to be the same statement on the face of the balance sheet that companies currently make under Section 477 of the Companies Act 2006, which says that the directors have claimed audit exemption. It's going to be another statement. When I had the update on this on Friday, it was quite unclear as to whether it was going to be whether the statement is going to be we're claiming audit exemption because of the turnover limit or the balance sheet total is below the threshold or what. I'm not quite sure what it is, but there's going to be some sort of audit exemption statement. In addition, timing-wise, I'm asked quite a lot about this, when all this is due to come into effect. The update that I got on Friday was that the statutory instrument, the Economic Crime Bill, which contains the reforms for Companies House, is passing through Parliament quite fast. It's going through the stages quite quickly. It's at the various committee stages at the moment. Once it receives royal assent, then it will become effective. Now, I'm not quite sure whether there's going to be some sort of implementation date or whether it will all become effective as soon as it receives royal assent. The planned timetable, as I was told on Friday, is that they're expecting royal assent to be sometime in the spring, which is, of course, starting from March. So whether it's early spring, mid-spring or late spring, we're not sure. I've just been told spring, but it is something that I would imagine is coming in further this year. I just want to clarify one other regulatory change, if you like, and that is the Financial Reporting Council. Of course, we all know by now that eventually they are going to be known as the Audit Reporting and Governance Authority. That is scheduled as well to take place this year, 2023, a transition from the FRC to AGA. I can't see how it would massively affect practice. It's just going to affect the way that the regulator is structured and the powers that the regulator is given, because they're going to be given more powers as well to hold directors to account. I would imagine things like the standard setting process, all those sorts of things, the regulatory and monitoring processes are all going to stay the same. One final thing I'm just going to quickly squeeze in, just while it's coming round in my head, Charities Act, that also has been changed. Amended through the Charities Act 2022. Again, I'm not going to cover the detail of all of that in this webinar, because of course I'm pushed for time, but we are about to publish a charities course in the not too distant future on accountingcpd.net that does look at the changes that the Charities Act 2022 has made for charities in England and Wales and in Northern Ireland.
Right. I've got a couple of things that people have raised that I'll put to you before my final question. The first one is a housekeeping issue. Somebody has asked whether we get a summary of today's webinar as they're struggling to keep up. I'd say two things in response to that. One is that we produce a transcript of the webinar for the purposes of putting in subtitles for the hard of hearing, and happy to send that transcript out to anybody. So yes, we can send you that. But the other point I'd make is that today's webinar is really an overview of what's coming, and is not intended to be the kind of detail of what you need to know. It's saying these are all the things you need to be expecting. So you may just kind of, some very summary notes you may take yourselves just with the key points and thinking I've kind of got my head around that might be enough for people for today, rather than try. I think we're not giving enough, deliberately not giving enough detail on any one particular thing for that to be the moment. The other question that someone's asked is that, and I think this is really just checking for to make absolutely certain. I'm paraphrasing this, but I hope I'm not misunderstanding. They're just saying, I think particularly talking about the risk of materiality changes in the audit regulations, they're just checking that doesn't have any spillover onto anybody. If you don't do anything to do with audit, that's got no implications for you. They're saying, we do a firm-wide risk assessment. That I think the answer to that is that isn't affected by any of this at all, isn't it?
I don't think it is firm-wide risk assessment. That, to me, talks anti-money laundering regulations.
Yeah.
So, no, it's that doesn't affect audit.
Right. Okay. In that case, I've got one other question, but as I told you when we got together before this webinar, it's something of an excuse for me to make a point. So maybe I'll make the point first and then put it to you, to be more honest. We, for the first time, now that we're part of a larger group, we had an audit completed on Accounting CPD last year, and that completed in December, and we filed our accounts before the year end. I was delighted to say that we got a completely clean bill of health, and our accounts were filed exactly as they'd been prepared.
Well done.
Audit turned out, which of course is good news, although irritating because it costs quite a lot of money and doesn't. But you know, you can't have it always, can you? But despite the fact that I got exactly what I wanted, I still came out the end of the process fairly irritated because of the poor communication with the audit firm. And so I wanted to say, if there's one thing you should have in your CPD plan for this year that isn't a technical update, it's to think about client relationships and what you can put in place to improve that. So my question to you, Steve, is that something you think your firm does well? I suppose is the question. But also, if there was one thing you said to people, I think you should spend some time thinking about this, what would it be?
Well, first one, I'll answer this in reverse order. Second one is obviously enroll for the Accounting CPD UK and GAP and Ireland UK and Ireland GAP update, you know, because that'll give you basically everything, you know, up to date, sort of where you need to be. Now, in answer to your first question, now it's interesting you should ask this, because my career didn't take the traditional route that most people take. You know, when you start off as a trainee accountant, you usually start off in practice, you go into audit, hate it, and then leave practice and go into industry and earn loads and loads of money. Okay, well, I didn't do that. I started off in industry, hated it, and then moved into practice. So I've been on both sides of the audit profession. And I think the communication aspect is quite important, particularly where you have like junior members of audit staff who are asking questions to audit clients. Now, we use a specific audit methodology and an audit program. Now, a lot of the steps on these, and a lot of auditors who are on the webinar today will probably be able to relate to what I'm about to say. A lot of the steps that you see on detailed audit programs nowadays are quite repetitive. And they ask you to do the same thing, like 10 steps further on, but in different words. Yeah. Now, that might depend on the direction that you're testing certain transactions in to cover the assertions, such as like completeness or existence. But I think the communication thing is quite important, because if you've got an audit junior that's running in and out every 5 minutes, asking you for different information and asking questions that you've answered a dozen times before that week, of course, you are going to get sort of a bit aggravated with it. I think the key for audit firms is just to sort of, I mean, what I do as the audit engagement partner here is I sort of brief the staff, and I have an audit manager, an audit senior and an audit junior out on all audits. And any sort of difficult or contentious issues, we don't try to build them up as such and answer and make the client answer all the queries in one go, because that isn't an efficient use of time. I think it's a case of just trying to work out what's more important and what you need to do to complete the task. If something's going to hold you up, then obviously discuss it with the client. But it's just about trying to create as less a disruption as possible to the client, but at the same time, making sure the audit doesn't drag on for 6 weeks. Okay, because the audit manager will want the audit staff off the job quite quickly. And certainly the client doesn't want you there for 6 weeks, do you not, Alan?
It was a lot longer than 6 weeks. But it was supposed to start with that sort of length. Anyway, I've got one other question, and after that, I'm going to cut off the questions, and we'll come back to them. We will answer any further questions people ask, but we'll do it at the end.
Okay.
But I'm going to ask this question now, because it's a question I nearly asked myself, and it's to do with when they release an exposure draft, do they put a likely date on implementation? The question specifically is, if UK GAAP adopts IFRS 16, when do you see that happening from?
But first of all, they are not adopting IFRS 16. No, they are aligning FRS 102 to the principles of it. They can't adopt IFRS 16 because it's too complicated. In terms of when this is going to come into effect, the FRC have said that they are looking for this to be come into play, along with all the other amendments, for accounting periods commencing on or after the 1st of January 2025. Now, don't just think, well, that's ages off, I don't need to know about it, because you need to assess the impact on clients. And of course, don't forget, with anything like this, the likelihood is you're going to have to restate prior year comparatives. So you need to keep that in the back of your mindset as well. So it's all about planning for the transition and getting as up to date as possible, looking at the tax implications of it as well. I believe the HMRC are already planning on looking at how the tax implications of this is going to happen, like they did with IFRS 16 reporters. So don't just think, oh, I don't need to know about that until December 2025, because the likelihood is you're going to need to look at the impact on balance sheets, particularly for clients that have got covenants. Okay, because you don't want to be breaching the covenant, and you don't want to be leaving it to the last minute and saying to a client, by the way, your asset covenant's going to be breached, because the bank can call in loans and overdrafts and all sorts of things which can collapse a company. So it's all about making sure that we're geared up, we understand what's happening, we understand the accounting treatments, we understand the impact on the balance sheet and on the P&L account, and more crucially for the client, we understand the tax implications so we can advise them.
Great. Good. Thank you very much, Steve. So I should wrap things up with you for the time being. And that's been absolutely fascinating, as always. I should say thank you, Steve. I need you, of course, to stick around, because people are going to ask questions that are way beyond my ability to answer and come back at the end. But for the time being, thank you very much, Steve.
No problem.
So I'm now delighted to introduce our next guest, Gail McAvoy. Gail is the founder and managing director of McAvoy Craig, an accountancy practice based in Drogheda. Between 2013 and 2019, Gail was a board member of IFAC, and prior to that, a technical advisor to the IFAC SNP committee. After being appointed by the Minister for Transport, Gail served for 10 years as director of Drogheda Port Company, a state commercial port which handles over 1 million tonnes of cargo annually. She's a past president of CPA Ireland, and last, but by no means least, she was between 2018 and 2022 a non-executive director of Nelson Croom, the company which owns Accounting CPD. But I noticed, Gail, which wasn't significant enough to make it onto your LinkedIn profile.
Oh, apologies for that. I need to check that out.
Great to see you.
Yeah, you too. Good to be here and great to present these findings.
So people may not know that the reason why we asked you to come along today because the subject of digitalization in the firm is of interest to everybody. But the reason why we asked you particularly was because of the research work that you did and the report that you wrote on that subject. So I wonder whether you could start by just explaining that project and what it involved.
Okay. For my sins way back in 2018, I started a master's here in Ireland in technology and innovation. And the subject of my thesis, I tried to stick to what was going to be relevant and important to me. And at the time, we were undergoing a bit of digital transformation ourselves here in the practice. So I thought, first of all, when I looked at it, it's quite a challenging journey for an SMP. Due to resources, financial and time, okay? And the type of clients we typically have are the smaller clients. So their interest in going digital is limited. So I wanted to know, well, is everybody else finding this, okay? And the fact that how we are in Ireland quite often relates to how how you progress in the UK, and quite often you're a little bit a step further, and particularly with this making tax digital, you're just that little further down the road. And I wanted to see, was there a difference in practices of the same size in the UK and Ireland? And so that's asked the question, and so that was the subject of my thesis.
That's great. And I think by the end of talking to you about it, I understood all of that. But when we first started, I kind of understood that there was a challenge for smaller practices, that they just didn't have the scale to have the appropriate people who might have understanding of all the different things. But it really hadn't struck me that there was also a level of sophistication in their client base as well that wasn't the same, and that might create a challenge as well. I thought that was really interesting. So in sort of summary form, what were the main highlights of your research findings?
Okay, well, one of the big things that came out for me was it was an even distribution in answers from both the UK and Ireland, which was great, okay, because it gave a very clear balance to the findings. And nearly, I think it was over 85% of the respondents were actually micro SMPs, if you know what I mean. They turn over less than $1 million. They were one partner or a sole practitioner, two partner or sole practitioners. So firstly, it was a great representation of the micro SMPs. Now, in the paper, I kind of referred to, because it was actually very difficult to find a similar survey having been done. And IFAC had done this in 2018, but what they call an SMP and how I interpret an SMP are two completely different things, even though there is a definition there. So that initially it's a great balance of what I call micro SMPs. All right. So turnover of less than $1 million. And overall, the findings were that we're not as far down this digital journey as I suppose the IFAC survey would have led you to believe, number one, or maybe practitioners feel every other practice is, okay? Everyone feels they're falling behind and everybody's making great waves in this journey, but that is not the case. The obvious stuff, such as social media, maybe extracting bank transactions straight from financial institutions, an electronic database, file storage, all those easy stuff in the sense that they're immediately available and the direction is very obvious. The people had started that journey and more were doing it than were not doing it. The harder stuff, such as clients accessing a portal, I suppose going paperless, what else? Auditing in general, okay, in the various parts of the audit, those sort of things, the journey to that end was that people had not taken it at all, really, you know. Some had completely committed to it, but mostly the rest of the respondents had not really got into that at all. It was only the very obvious things, time recording, client database, this sort of stuff. And the I suppose one of the reasons for that that were highlighted was that the difficulty in trying to find a package that will cater for all of that. And you generally, unless you're going to have one tailor built for yourself, you've got to go to an off-the-shelf package. And what happens is there's a package to do one thing or another. The auditing will not talk to maybe the bookkeeping package. The booking package doesn't talk to the CRM. So getting the packages to actually talk to each other was another thing. I think... the client buy-in also was a bigger factor in this than I had originally thought.
That's interesting. I would have thought that there were lots of potential. When you listen to the rhetoric around this, you'd think there were lots of benefits to client.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you think there was reluctance?
I guess nobody likes change, okay? I mean, the practitioners themselves don't like change. And accountants being accountants, I'd like to see the proof that this is going to actually make me more productive or it's going to be a benefit to my client before I undertake this journey, okay? And the difficulty is there aren't that many that had successfully done it. The clients as well, they get very used to just handing in stuff in a bag or in a box or in the post, or it's scanning maybe stuff to you via email, which I suppose maybe is a digital thing. But when we were doing the survey, I was limiting the digital to uploading information into a particular portal. So the clients just are not ready for that change, and they're unsure of the real benefits to it. And trust is another thing, you know, I guess, trusting where the information is going and all of that.
Yes, I guess this kind of here's the shoebox mentality. It's a bit like my approach to going to the dentist. I turn up, I lie slightly about how often I clean my teeth and how often I use a teepee. I get told off, and then they make it all right again, and I come back in a few months' time and do
that's
the
same
thing happens. And I'm really happy with that.
Yeah, exactly.
And when I say, well, yes, I'll be a better person and I'll spend 10 minutes a day doing whatever, I am lying. And I think they know that. But anyway, there is a kind of complicity, isn't there, that every year I'm a bad person, I get myself in a mess, I turn up with a shoebox and my accountant's the same and works it all out.
Yes.
Why would they want to change?
Yeah. Now, I think that I think COVID has really been an opportunity for all of us to talk the clients into convince them to the benefits and the time saving in getting information to us. OK, so I do think that's an opportunity we should be embracing. And I think a lot of accountants are embracing it. And I think if the survey were to be done today, this was done during COVID. If the survey were to be done today or maybe this time next year, the results might be significantly different because a lot of accountants will have taken the opportunity that COVID has presented to us to try and drag the clients along this journey. Because in reality, when the accountants who had made inroads into the digitalization, they were singing the praises of it. Okay. I mean, all of the respondents on the benefits of it were really over 80% in saying that this is actually a benefit. And obviously increased productivity. I suppose it allows the practice provide extra services. It adds a little bit of credibility to the practice when you're promoting it. I mean, trying to entice new clients in, you say we offer this service, and although not everybody fully understands how to use digital, it does sound impressive and it sounds important. Attracting talent, that's one of the big issues at the moment, certainly here in Ireland. So being that further down the road with digital will attract candidates where they would come to you maybe over somebody who has not made that. And it also facilitates working from home, access to information at meetings. So the benefits, the people who had made the journey had nothing really bad to say about it, that things had improved for them.
So a lot of it's fear and about ability to take it on, and a bit of an initial reluctance from clients, as you say.
Yes, that's a big thing. That was one of my big surprises on it. Yeah.
Separate from the the reluctance of clients to engage. Did you get any responses from people who got their clients to engage as to whether that meant that work was... I know that there's some part of the process of an online bookkeeping system where some of the work is transferred from the accountant to the client and they upload some of the things themselves. How did the accountants find that? Did it save them time or...
It depends. It saves time if there's a qualified bookkeeper doing it. If the client is doing it themselves, the accountant can quite often find themselves fixing the work. So it does depend on the level of expertise of the client, and your solution is probably going to be different depending on that. Where the expertise, they know what they're doing, it's streamlined and it does save time and obviously then money. But if you're kind of training the client into doing it and you're fixing errors that maybe there, it doesn't have the same benefit.
I can see the frustration there. You've got a client who isn't very willing. You manage to get them to engage, and you provide training, which they probably aren't very keen on paying for, and then they forget it all and don't do it properly. And they're still your clients, and you want to be polite to them and treat them properly, but that's a bad dynamic for the relationship.
It kind of is. So you the solution is going to be different, you know, for everybody. You might have two clients doing the exact same way of uploading information. And then you do also get, which I know a lot of people that are in practice will be able to agree with me on this, clients who think, oh, sure, I'm doing all the work. So, you know, so you do get that a little bit of that attitude,
People are split on that, aren't they? I'd be very frustrated if I couldn't ever do anything without sending it to someone else and asking them to do it for me. I'd end up just thinking, you know, I have to send all this off and make a request and then it comes back. I'd rather just do it myself. It'd be quicker than explaining it. So for me, I'd love to have the sort of, that seems like a real benefit, but I can see that for a lot of other clients, they just want to get on with what their job is and not be doing that stuff at all.
Not what'll happen is you'll have a mix of clients where there's going to be the group of clients that all you're going to ever be able to get them to do is potentially use a scanner and scan the stuff to you. Okay, right. And then there's going to be the others who can see where the duplication is and where, if you show me how to do it, it's going to save us all some time and money.
Great. Yeah. Was there anything that you found out during the research that really took you by surprise?
The client buy-in, which we've already covered, took me by surprise. Also, the overall theme where people hadn't really made the journey, okay, or they'd only done a little bit, they've registered a website name, they've registered their domain name, they've got a time recording system, and that really was all they had done. That surprised me as well, the fact that people, I assumed it was just me, and when I looked around, I realised this is everybody, and the quality of responses was very good. And it, you know, when you ask people, could you expand a little bit on the comments at the end? Quite often, everybody did. And they gave me a great insight, which was hard to capture in one document, into exactly why. And they were very honest about it. Clients don't like it. This is not saving me money, or there's too much to choose from, or I don't have the time to read up on what each package offers. And then when I do install them all, they're not one of them is talking to the other and collating all that information. So the level of response was very, very good. And the detail in the response gave me a very clear picture of where we were. And we were all in the same boat.
That's really interesting. Those are perfectly legitimate objections, aren't they? And to some extent, they boil down to the vendors haven't made it easy enough yet.
Yeah, there is a gap there, and maybe the likes of Bright or Sage or somebody like that, there is a definite gap there that could be filled. I think there's probably the two I've mentioned anyway. I know they are trying to get there, but it's difficult even for them, the amount of investment that is required to get an all-round package like that, that will satisfy the audit requirements and also then right back to the bookkeeping requirements for the clients.
I sympathise with that, not being in that game myself, but obviously have sourcing software and software plugins for what we do quite often. It's not just a question of finding the piece of software that does what you want. It's also a question of ruling out all the other ones that say they do what you want. Yeah. But after you spend quite a lot of due diligence on them, you find out they don't really do. what they said. They're just saying that because the other people have to and they have to match it. And
of course,
you're very frustrating, the claims that the vendors make about how their system works.
Yeah, and I think accountants are sceptical, and they're right to be sceptical. Over the years, our experience this has served us well. So it's a difficult solution to come up with, okay, and an expensive solution to get right and to get to offer the support for everybody to implement it as well. And, you know, and to make money doing that. But I tell you, there's an opportunity there.
Is there, obviously there's... This message isn't a very positive one, and I guess I'm searching for something that's more positive to come out of this. But there is at least a message, which is don't despair. You're not out there on your own, being the only person who's not conquered the world with this stuff yet.
Yeah,
are struggling too. That's reassuring, but you don't want to leave people complacent about where they are, because
at
some point, sooner or later, they will get left behind.
Yeah, I think what I've really done myself here in the practice, start the journey. Okay, so if you leave this webinar saying, oh, Rocket Right is okay, everybody else is where I am. They're not everybody is now. This is 18 months later. Start the journey, because if you gradually try and solve a few of the problems before you know where you are, the market will have caught up and you'll be well ready for it. You know, and there it wasn't one accountant said this is not a worthwhile journey. Okay,
that's interesting. So even those that were saying this is hard and my clients don't want it, they weren't saying I shouldn't do it. They were just saying this haven't yet.
Yeah. None of them regretted having done it. And I think if you're considering it, do it. Pick something, do it, and plan if you can. Okay, and liaise with other accountants. I know from just my own experience here, even though your competitor down the road, if you pick up the phone, they are happy to talk to you about this.
I think
they're happy to share this information and their own experience. So that help and support, it's always been there in this industry. I've never found it any other way. We forget to use it, though. And there's all sorts of WhatsApp groups out there, and that somebody, if you make the phone call, there'll be a group. There'll be somebody talking about Sage. There'll be somebody talking about Relate or what other packages are, or even Making Tax Digital, and get talking to your mates, because they will support you.
Great. Well, that seems like a really positive note to draw this part of the discussion to a close. I really enjoyed being a bit involved at the end in the report. And for those that are interested, it's available as a white paper on the Accountant CPD website, Digitalization in the Smaller Practice. It's brief and it makes a really good read, and it's compelling. But you brought it to life to even more today, Gail, and you shared some of your findings that I think are a bit more are really revealing, but probably not the sorts of things you put in an actual report. So that's been really
nobody would read it.
That's great. So stay where you are. We're going to take questions from people now, and I'm going to welcome back Steve to join us on the screen here so that we can take any questions. So at this stage, I'd encourage people to type questions into either the chat or into the Q&A session. I've got a few here, but there's space for more should you want to ask them. So maybe I should start by asking Gail the same question as I asked Steve. Perhaps the non-technical stuff. If there was a non-technical thing, I guess you've answered the question to some extent, but let's not allow you to say digitalization as the answer. There was a non-technical thing you were encouraging people to include alongside the technical stuff on their CPD plan for this year. What would it be?
My honest answer would be some sort of project management skill. Okay, because this is the project. It's not like anything else we do. Okay, and it's probably a little bit outside of our expertise. It's one of those that requires a table. Whose responsibility? When do you want it? And what needs to be done? And I think that if you're going to take the journey yourself and you're going to lead that, I think something along the lines of project management.
I think that's a really good tip, actually. Sometimes when there's something that we're embarking on that we find a bit scary, we just kind of hide behind a stone and then eventually make ourselves dive in. But maybe removing some of the peripheral objects and objections, which are like, it's going to be a big project and I don't know how to manage it, can give you confidence to tackle stuff. Good, thank you. Steve, I should turn the thing the other way around. How is your practice doing with digitalization?
Well, you see,
do you mean well or do you mean well?
Well, the thing with me is, right, for years I said we wouldn't go paperless with our audit files because I said the ACCA won't like it. And then eventually my audit manager, who is very, very sort of tech savvy, dragged me kicking and screaming to a paperless system, and I wouldn't go back. I love it. I think it's brilliant. We are doing well as a practice for digitalization. We have had to sort of shed some clients who are just like refusing, you know, to do anything sort of digital, because what you'll find, certainly, I think Making Tax Digital has now been postponed for a couple of years. I thought they were going to declare it a bank holiday here in the UK when they decided they were going to postpone that, because everybody was cheering about it, wasn't it? It was like England had won the World Cup when MTD got deferred by a couple of years. But we've had to be strategic about this, because it is going to affect every client. And for those clients that say, I refuse to have any sort of software, the reality of it is you, an accountant isn't going to be able to help you ultimately. So we're saying it's not us that is forcing this issue, it's the revenue that's forcing this issue. But we are sort of quite advanced when it comes to digitalization, you know, because we, you know, a lot of the people coming through now are tech savvy. You know, and that's a great thing sort of for the profession, I think, going forward. As like the new people coming through, they're all like, they know about apps, they know about tablets, they know how to get two screens to work. I can just about send a message and do FaceTime on my old iPhone. I'm quite good about it. I am quite okay. I can find my way around them. Things, but there are certain things that I'm not, and there's certain things that, you know, you just sort of think that could be really, really powerful. But yeah, it's going okay, I think.
Good. Yeah. Okay, one final question. This one's for you, Gail. As a managing partner in an accounting practice, which areas of the kind of technical updates that are coming down the line do you worry about most with regard to your team maintaining their competence? Which are the tricky things that you think we really need to focus on now?
I think the AML stuff, nobody likes those, okay? I'm sorry, but they just don't. And your feeling is, oh, something's changed and I haven't kept up to date, or whatever I'm doing is out of date. So that's certainly, obviously, all the stuff that Steve was referring to there, as he was talking, I was going, oh my God, I didn't even know about that. Yeah, so all of that stuff is very important. And maybe to highlight the very technical stuff, I don't know, because you're great at communication as you are, Alan, but I wonder, is there some way of getting across to the likes of me and other members that this is super important, this is not what's gone before, you need to do this, and the very important and the big changes to the technical stuff, particularly around accounting, reporting and auditing.
Great. Well, thank you for that, Gail. Thank you both. That's been really great. I'm going to have to bring it to a close now because we're just a couple of minutes off our allotted time, and I get shot if I run over the hour. So it's my job. They say your job, Alan, is to make it run to time. And I think, oh, thanks for bigging me up there. don't forget that if you have an account with Accounting CPD, your attendance here will be logged at our end automatically. Your CPD record will be updated. That should be done by the end of play tomorrow. If you're new to Accounting CPD, you can create an account on the site and then log this event manually in the webinars and videos section of the site. If you have any problems at all, just jump on live chat and we'll talk you through it. It just remains for me to thank our panelists. Thank you, Steve, for your insights on the year ahead and your encyclopedic knowledge of the numbering system of standards, which always freaks me out. Thank you, Gail, for your thoughts and insights into digitalization and a real dose of the real world there. Really fantastic. And most importantly, thank you all for coming. Our next webinar is tomorrow at 11 o'clock, when we'll be looking at the concept of risk and materiality, strangely enough. Open to all accounting CPD license holders. The next Lunch and Learn webinar of this kind is scheduled for Thursday, the 11th of May at 1 p.m. Till then, goodbye and thank you for coming.